Creating mandatory minimum sentences for various drug crimes has long been on the Tories' look tough on crime agenda. The latest incarnation of this goal is packaged into Bill S-10, which is currently making its way through the Senate. Supporters say that mandatory minimums will send a clear message that dealing drugs will not be tolerated. Community health organizations, legal experts, grassroots activists, along with many others, have a different opinion. They point to a wide range of evidence that shows that mandatory minimums don't actually work, but instead put more people at risk and make communities less safe. Joining us to talk more about Bill S-10 and the impacts of mandatory minimums and drug policy is Maya Martin. She's a lawyer and a member of the National Community Justice Coalition. The coalition formed earlier this year to organize to fight the tough on crime agenda and present alternatives. Maya joins us on the phone from Toronto. Thanks for joining us this evening, Maya.
Thanks for having me.
Can you start by telling us more about what exactly the government is proposing in this bill?
Sure. Maybe where I should start is to explain a little bit about what exactly a mandatory minimum sentence is. In Canada, there are about 30 crimes that carry a mandatory minimum sentence under the criminal code. This always means that the individual charged will be going to jail. And they're usually crimes that involve firearms or sexual offenses involving children or impaired driving. So what that means is if you're convicted of an offense that carries a mandatory minimum sentence, the judge doesn't have any discretion when imposing a sentence. And usually in determining a proper sentence, a judge will consider the situation of the person that's convicted. And so there will be aggravating and mitigating factors. And usually aggravating factors include things like if violence was involved in the commission of the offense, or if the offense involved any racial hatred, or if the offense was of a domestic nature. So very, very serious stuff. And mitigating factors will include things like the family situation of the offender, if they've taken responsibility for the offense, if they've shown remorse, and if they're a drug user, or the terminology used in the case law is a drug addict. This usually serves to reduce the prison term that somebody is given. But in this situation, because there is a mandatory minimum sentence, the offender, the judge can't exercise any discretion. So there was a survey done in 1987 of judges and how judges felt about mandatory minimum sentences, and they felt that it hindered their ability to impose a just and fair sentence, which is pretty serious. In this case, under S-10, S-10 would impose a mandatory minimum sentence of 1 year for any trafficking charge, possession for the purpose of trafficking, importing, exporting, or producing drugs besides cannabis, or including cannabis if the amount is large enough. And the Tories have labeled this bill penalties for organized drug crimes, but that's only one of the aggravating factors. You can receive the mandatory minimum sentence of 1 year in a lot of different situations. People have been calling it a two strikes, you're out situation, because if the offender has been convicted of a substance offense, one of the ones that I mentioned earlier, then they will also receive the mandatory minimum. So it's the Tories are talking about it as targeting organized crime, but it actually includes all of these other people, lower-level traffickers who are maybe trafficking for survival reasons, things like that.
And they introduced two similar bills in the past that died on the floor. How does Bill S-10 differ from those first two original bills?
I don't know too much about the previous bills, except I know that I think in its original incarnation, you could receive the mandatory minimum if you had one marijuana plant. And now they're sort of saying, well, you need to have six marijuana plants. So there have been some minor changes, but I don't think that any of the previous bills died because there was huge opposition to them. The first bill, B-26, died because there was an election called in 2006. And C-15, its second incarnation, died because of the prorogation that happened in December of 2009.
So for people who are concerned about drugs in our communities and the impacts they have on people, families, friends, kids, they want something done, and this sounds you know, on paper it sounds good. You know, people who are trafficking and selling drugs to our kids will be put behind bars. So I think that's maybe part of the appeal of this type of thing. What do you say to people who say that to you?
Well, I mean, everybody has an interest in having communities be safer, but there's no evidence that mandatory minimum sentences actually make communities safer at all. They probably will lead to lengthier incarcerations for people, which will lead to increased prison costs that are not necessarily offset by any reduction in crime rates or reduction in people becoming repeat offenders. Mandatory minimum sentences in the states where they've had mandatory minimum sentences for drug crimes for the last 25 years, there have been studies done that show that there's a disproportionate number of people who are poor, who are young, who are people of color, and people who are drug addicted who've been thrown in jail with no actual impact on the drug business itself. So this bill probably is not going to target the large-scale profiteers that don't engage in kind of small-scale street-level drug deals.
Why is it not effective? If you're taking people who are the dealers and putting them behind bars, why wouldn't that stop the drug trade?
Prisons, basically, they've done all these studies to show that if you want someone to become a repeat offender, the easiest way to do that is by throwing them in jail. That's where people learn how to commit bigger and better crimes. And in this kind of situation where you're dealing with drug crimes, throwing people in jail doesn't really help with addiction issues. There have been studies that have shown that people who were never intravenous drug users then begin injecting drugs when they're in jail and in quite an unsafe way because there are no needle exchanges available in the prisons, which means that rates of HIV infection and hep C are incredibly high in prisons. And these people then go out into the community as well. So, I mean, I think there's an assumption that, you know, prison can be a place where drug users are treated for their addiction, but that hasn't proven true at all, and they're generally not very good programs in jail for that kind of thing. And it doesn't deal with the underlying social problems that lead people to self-medicate.
And so you mentioned this a little bit, but how will mandatory minimums impact the rate of transmission of various diseases, including hep C and HIV, both inside and outside of prison?
Well, it will increase the prison population. It will increase, because this is specifically about drugs, it's going to increase the number of drug users that are in prison. And the assumption that people are going to stop using drugs because they're sent to prison is just not true. And there's no safe way for people to use drugs in prison. So, it's just, you know, it should be treated as a medical issue rather than as a criminal justice issue, in my opinion. This is particularly going to have an impact on women. There's women only make up a small portion of the prison population in Canada, but a lot of women are in for drug crimes that are related to personal drug use. So because this bill is really targeting drug users, we're probably going to see an increase of women that end up in prison based on this bill.
And so what about fiscal costs? How do things line up in terms of this type of approach or other types of alternatives in terms of how much it costs?
Keeping people in jail is really, really expensive. It's a lot more expensive to keep people incarcerated in an institution rather than having people even serve their sentence in the community. Because this bill is introducing a mandatory minimum, it means that a conditional sentence order is not available. It's not available for any offenses that carry a mandatory minimum sentence. So this means that people will definitely be serving prison time as opposed to serving their sentence in the community where they could have more support from their family and more sort of better treatment programs.
And some backers of mandatory minimums argue that these types of things deter crime, deter people from, you know, doing whatever the crime is. What do you think about that argument?
Well, I think in terms of, they sometimes talk about deterrence in terms of specific deterrence, so in terms of the offender that's been incarcerated, and then sort of general deterrence for other people in the community who are maybe thinking about committing that crime. I think for the individual offender in this case, if this is about drug use and drug addiction, I don't see how prison is really going to solve that issue. And in terms of general deterrence, I don't know if people base their behavior based on that.
And what about communities that are already overrepresented inside the prison system and the criminal justice system, such as the Aboriginal community? How will mandatory minimums impact those communities?
Well, I think probably we're going to see an increase in that. That's been the experience in the U.S., who are now moving away from mandatory minimum sentences for drug crimes because they've just found that the result has been really onerous on communities made up of people of color and made up of First Nations. And because in Canada, we really over-police communities that are not white, I suspect that the impact will be that there will be even more people who from those communities who end up in jail. So it will probably get worse.
And you mentioned in the States some jurisdictions are reversing this approach. Can you tell us a little bit more about those jurisdictions and what they're doing differently now than they have done in the past in terms of mandatory minimums and a tough-on-crime approach?
That is a very good question. But I don't know tons about the U.S. situation, so I can't say where exactly they're doing that. But, I mean, because they have had the mandatory minimums for a long enough period of time that they've been able to hopefully, you know, see the impact, and the impact has not been good. The other option is treatment, which to me would make a lot more sense. I mean, even though the Tories are trying to describe this as getting at organized crime, like I said, there's only sort of the way that they've defined organized crime doesn't really make you think of, you know, the mafia. It's basically three or more people whose purpose it is to commit a serious offense for material benefit. It's, to me, that sounds like there could be a lot of other people included within that. Also in the bill, you could get a mandatory minimum sentence of 2 years if the offense is committed in or near a school or any other public place that's usually frequented by people under the age of 18, which is incredibly vague because if you think about where kids go, kids are everywhere. So it's going to be very difficult to define that, and I think there's going to be a lot of people who get kind of grouped in that maybe, you know, were not necessarily envisioned by the bill.
Just on this issue of organized crime, I think it's a pretty big issue in terms of drugs and organized crime. How do you think we should deal with that issue if it's not through further criminalization or further legal, you know, means?
I don't know. I mean, it's at a certain level, it's about supply and demand. So if there's a demand for a particular drug, there will always be somebody that is willing to step in and fill that. So it may make more sense for us to think a little bit more holistically about this and why it is that there is widespread drug use in certain communities and, you know, what kind of healing needs to be done to deal with some of that. But really, the high-level dealers who are really making the money here are not going to be impacted by this bill.
So in terms of Bill S-10, it's currently before the Senate. What are things looking like in terms of the political landscape in this bill?
Well, I mean, it's hard to say. I think it's been introduced, and there's been a couple of debates on it, and they're still waiting for the second reading. I'm not sure. I think what Harper keeps talking about is how, you know, in Canada, everybody wants him to be tougher on crime, and, you know, people want him to deal with the drug dealers and that kind of thing. But there was a survey done in 2007 where the public said, yes, you know, we do want tougher drug laws, blah, blah, blah. But the public really supported restorative sentencing objectives rather than mandatory minimums or this kind of really harsh, brutal way of dealing with it. So I think to say that, you know, the general public wants Harper to get tough on crime you know, they're not really picturing the people that this bill is going to impact the most.
And this isn't just the Tories. I mean, a lot of the other political parties are also on board with this type of approach. Is that true?
It's true. I think so. And I think the problem is that people don't ever see themselves being on the other side of this. They don't ever see themselves as being the target of this bill, because, you know, most of us don't think of ourselves as organized criminals. But when in fact, you know, this is going to include all kinds of other people who are not major criminals, who are drug users supporting their habits,
who are at home making pot cookies or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. If they have, you know, too many plants at home. So,
well, thanks so much for joining us and shedding a little bit of light on what's going on there in Ottawa and on the issue of mandatory minimums.
Well, thanks for having me.
We've been speaking with Maya Martin. She's a lawyer and a member of the National Community Justice Coalition. They're a recently formed coalition organizing around the Tough on Crime agenda in Toronto. For more information on harm reduction and mandatory minimums, you can go to two different websites. One's the Canadian HIV/AIDS Legal Network. They have a lot of great information. It's aidslaw.ca. There's also the Canadian Harm Reduction Network. Their website is canadianharmreduction.com. And if you want to contact the National Community Justice Coalition, they are working on a website, but for now they have an email, and it's augcoalition@gmail.com.